Welcome to Salty, the podcast dedicated to saltwater fly fishing. I'm your host, Rob Shumsky, and I'm joined by my co-host, James Jackson, Jennifer Matsu, and Eric Ostrom. We are a fly fishing podcast where we have candid conversations about fly fishing in saltwater and cover various topics including equipment, skiffs, travel, and the fly fishing community. Welcome. Let's dive on in. Welcome, everyone.
Hey, y'all.
What's up?
Hey, hey.
So, three of us are sitting in the fly room in Bayou Vista, Texas. And James is up in Montgomery, Texas, about 60 miles north of us. And today, we thought we'd start from the beginning and the basics and find out what you need to go fly fish in the saltwater, especially around the Texas Gulf Coast or any inshore, I guess, small game, medium game kind of fish. So, sell me what I need.
Yeah, man. That really all it takes is just getting out there and making that first step, whether it's getting into your local fly shop, looking on Instagram, watching YouTube, and just figuring out what to do. But as far as gear goes, you can spend as little or as much as you want. And really, it just depends on who you are. It's just going to, if you spend $150, $200 on a rod, it's going to hurt a lot less if you break it.
You know? True. So. And let me hit on that too.
Yeah.
You will break a fly rod.
Absolutely. So anyways, everybody does it. So first step would be, if you don't know anybody personally involved in the fly fishing community, it's great. You have unlimited outlets to fly fishing as far as getting introduced to people into places.
And as far as like, you know, you're just getting into this, you could reach out to us on Instagram, go to the salty.podcast on Instagram, and all of our profiles will be up there. Link up with us there, and reach out, and we might be able to help you out further along. But we need some equipment. We need a rod. There's many ways to go. One of the main points we want to kind of drive across is, you know, try to support your local fly shop, because sometimes, you know, it's easier to go to a big box store or something like that. But without the fly shop, it's kind of dismal. It's super nice that we're in Houston and we have three fly shops to choose from. So within close proximity, I think there's one way out as well. But, we're fortunate here to have some, so we need to support our local fly shops. And, you know, if you don't know what to get, and instead of jumping to Instagram or the internet, those guys at the fly shop, they kind of know their stuff, so they can really point you in the right direction. And, you know, I want to kind of urge everyone to not be intimidated to go into these places, because not everyone has $1 million to spend on stuff, and they'll find you something in your budget. And if they don't, then that's probably not your fly shop, and you'll learn that real quick.
Absolutely. It's one of the most outgoing, friendly communities you can become a part of. Absolutely.
So let's go ahead and dive into, we need a rod, we need a reel, we need a line, a fly line, we need leaders, and we need flies. So let's go ahead and talk about like different types of rods we can kind of come across.
Well, I started with a used rod and reel that I bought from somebody who no longer needed it. And I got, I lucked out with a Hardy Zephyrus 8-weight and reel and the line that came with it. So I really, it was kind of a no-brainer for me, because I think I got it like for $400 and something. And that's what I learned mostly on in saltwater. I had a couple freshwater rods before that. And I think my first kind of small, like my 7 weight and maybe my 6 weight was one of those little package deals from Orvis, which was great and totally non-intimidating to go in there. And then I got this 8 weight and that's what I practiced with. And it was great for a long time. It still is great. And then I just needed to change out the line, which I learned after a little while that lines wear out.
They wear out. They're important. But that, I mean, you have that rod right here on the wall, right?
Oh my gosh. I think I'll always have that rod.
It's badass. It's incredible. And that's your first saltwater rod. Like, that's an awesome setup and a cool story. And you have it there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, so been out here in Texas 2 years. And really, that was my start into saltwater fly fishing. Before that, I'm from Northern California. So, you know, trout streams, lakes, and stuff like that. So, I got introduced at a super early age from my grandfather. I grew up in the Sierra Nevada. So trout fishing, you know, we got lakes and rivers. So I don't remember my first rod. I got it for Christmas. It was a Martin reel, but it's more than likely a 5 weight setup. But fast forwarding to saltwater, I kind of tailored my my streamer fishing, big trout fishing, into red fishing. So it doesn't have to be saltwater specific gear is what I'm trying to say. So, you know, I had Reddington gear,
right.
You know, and that's on the lower end. You know, you go TFO, Reddington, those are great setups. But again, you know, your price point is going to be, you know, $150 to $300, which is a great starting price point. And again, you're going to break stuff and I've broken stuff plenty of times.
You will break stuff.
So it really didn't, you know, hurt too bad when I broke that stuff. But yeah, coming over here, my introduction to redfish, I was using, you know, Reddington setup, not necessarily the best reel either. I think it was, you know, Taylor, which is a smaller company based out of New Mexico, but for redfish, I mean, it worked out perfect. And then line wise, just anything generic, you know, saltwater, Scientific Angler, Rio. I mean, everyone makes, you know, redfish lines and stuff. So really that was what I was introduced to with saltwater. And since then I've definitely dove into some more gear and tailored it to specific needs. But
yeah. And, you know, let's get, you know, we're going to talk a lot about this subject of what rod or what reel you need, but basically in, you know, this whole 8 weight saltwater world we're living in on the Gulf Coast of Texas, the reel is probably much like the freshwater guys that throw 5 weights, unless they're catching these big browns like Eric or something. But like in with our redfish, these reels are nothing more than a line holder. You know, I can't remember, that's not because I'm a bad fisherman, but I can't remember the last time like a redfish got me on the reel that I didn't put it on the reel. And I can't, and you know, for a fish in the Texas coast to get you into the backing, it's going to be a pretty nice fish. So let's just put that out there. I mean, you don't have to spend a lot of money on a reel, but I will say this, I'm a buy once cry once kind of guy, so I'd rather spend the $600 on a reel like the ones behind me and have them for 10 years.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
But like with you know, getting into this sport, there are the combo deals out there too. You know, there's almost every company makes a combo, and it comes with the line, the reel, the rod, the whole nine yards, everything you need to get set up to go fishing, minus a leader and a fly, or some of them might come with a leader on them. So there's many different avenues, and you know, talking about some rods, there's $200 rods. Maybe you don't want a combo, maybe you're above that, or maybe you just like a little bit nicer things. You know, the next step up might be that entry level Reddington or that entry level TFO setup. That'll run you a couple $100 for a rod, and then you can go all the way up to the $1,000 a rod, you know, realm, which I love my expensive rods, you know. I mean, I'm picky.
Ultimately, but everyone, I mean, if that stays within you'll the end sport. Up there. Yeah. You mean you can't compare. I mean the
but to that point, I think a properly set up rod is more important than an expensive rod.
Absolutely.
I agree.
So, you know, if you're trying to go cheap, like get it set up properly and it will fish better than an expensive rod set up improperly.
Definitely. I mean, what about you, James? I mean, where did you get your start into saltwater fly fishing and gear wise?
The Texas coast. A friend of mine was into it and I picked up my first TFO setup. It was an 8-weight, probably improperly set up. Fished it for 4 years or so. Went the route of buying a more expensive setup, and then kind of it all clicked as I was fishing that more expensive setup, but it was probably because it was properly set up, not more expensive.
So like an example, like what would you say was like an improper setup, or why did you feel like that first rod might have been improperly set up?
I took a buddy's advice. Like he showed me what to buy. I didn't know what to buy. I didn't go to a shop. You know, I walked in and said, I need this or that. Versus talking to a local fly shop and having them outfit me correctly.
And I think matching the line to the rod, you know, that's 100%. That's been key for me. Like, you know, figuring out, well, you know, I don't really understand the whole shooting heads and this and that and all, but I know when I cast a rod with the right line, and what I'll do is, you know, have the luxury of trying out a lot of different lines with a rod and trying to feel what's going to load right for me in that rod. And so that for me is absolutely key, because I can think I don't like a rod, but really it's the setup of the correct line with that rod.
No, I 100%.
Yeah, we'll get into the whole nine yards, but I agree, you know, a line, you can have the crappiest, shittiest setup, the cheapest setup. If you're going to spend $200 on a rod and, you know, a couple $100 on a reel, guess what? You probably need to spend $100 on the line.
I would say, I mean, 100%, besides, we'll get into this, sunglasses. Number two for me personally is a line. Mm-hmm. And if you go back historically and you look at, you know, in the 50s, 60s, what the dudes were using gear-wise for tarpon, for example.
Right.
Like, dude, like, yeah. It, you know, compared to what we have today, it's insane. So, I mean, even line too, but
yeah. And so like, you know, just kind of, just for our listeners out there that maybe, you know, they don't know anything about this kind of stuff, but like, let's say you have your entry level rod or your combo deal and you have your $1,000 fly rod, you know, what are you getting? I'm going to tell you without going too deep down the rabbit hole, what you're getting on the more expensive rod, you're getting better cork and better by, it looks better. You know, there's not as many putty marks on it or holes filled. You're getting way better guides, more corrosion resistant guides, especially in salt water. And I'm terrible, so I don't really rinse my gear off. I don't clean it. So if you're that guy that doesn't really take care of their equipment or rinse it off after every trip, you might want to spend a little bit more money on a little more expensive rod, because it's not going to corrode as fast, you know.
I learned that super quick. Like what I was saying, I brought all my stuff from California. It's freshwater right. stuff. And then I come out here and really you're going to learn. That's another thing you'll learn fast is, yeah, saltwater is no joke. It's going to eat everything alive.
It's going to eat everything. So that's the main difference in, you know, what kind of rod you're going to buy, where your money's going. And there's all kinds of technology on the different tapers of rods, you know, and, you know, your cheaper rod is probably going to weigh more than your more expensive rod. So you're paying for weight. You know, all this is, there's always a compromise in the rod. And in the reel, speaking of fly reels, you know, there's a compromise there too, but you know, you're not going to get the fish on the reel in Galveston, you
yeah,
know?
At least where we're at, yeah, where we're talking about,
yeah,
absolutely. Or need to, right.
Yeah. I would you say, know, yeah, spend
you,
your,
you can get it on the reel, but you don't need to. But
yeah, let's spend say your money on the rod.
But if you're mm-hmm. getting into, you know, saltwater fly fishing, and you're going to get an 8-weight setup, and you're going to go to the Bahamas and chase bonefish, I would go cheap on the rod, more expensive on the reel, because you're going to get into the backing. That fish could be 150 yards away before you know it. You know, I mean, it's gone. So, you know, there are some different things, but if you're going to mainly fish in Texas, and chase redfish, I'd say you can skimp on the reel. You know, you're going to spend $100 on a line. I think that's a must. I mean, I know there's some cheap lines out there that, you know, work, and people are like, no, this one's perfect. You know, it's great, but it's great for them. You know, if you go to any fly shop, here's the beautiful thing about a fly shop, a good one. You can go there. You could pick the rod you want. You could pick the line you want. I'm guaranteeing you, they have a reel with every line on it that you could throw on that rod. I know because I've done it. Because if I'm going to drop $900 on a rod, I want to either A, take my reel, take my line that I think might work, or I want to try another line on there that I think, you know,
yeah,
is going to work.
Well, and they're not dummies. They're going to hand you a rod with a line that throws well on that
Correct.
Rod.
Correct. And that's part of like supporting your local fly shop, you know? I mean, they do have the knowledge to deliver the goods to you. I mean, that's their job, because the last thing they want is you to walk out the door and not feel comfortable or not feel great about what you just spent your money on.
Yeah. And as far as getting what you pay for, I feel like another thing with line is you're really going to get what you pay for. There's so many companies out there. And if you go the cheap route, I mean, eventually you're going to have to replace a line no matter what, especially with saltwater. But you're going to get a lot more days on the water with a more expensive line than you are with just some cheap line. You're working with memory. The line's going to crack in the harsh saltwater environment.
Yeah, let's talk about when a line breaks. It's not sitting in your garage. It's on the bow of a boat. It's, you know, you're out there fishing when it goes bad.
Yeah, and you know, while we're talking about lines breaking, this is something, you know, just for the beginner guy, you know, getting into it, you know, let's say you already have your setup. We're going to talk a little bit about leaders and, you know, flies are pretty simple, but we're going to talk, you know, you have your rod, you got your reel, you got your line. You know, one thing I think I see a lot of people do that they don't realize they're doing is when they strip the line from the reel off, they strip it down and it kind of pulls on that coating a little bit, you know? So you want to pull the line off pretty clean so you're not rubbing against the sides of the reel to kind of weaken the line in some spots. I mean, usually at the bottom of the reel, there's a bar that sits across and a lot of people strip straight down and it drives me nuts. But I mean, I personally try to replace my fly lines on the rods that I use the most at least once a year, because they just wear out. And you know, you'll have a rod and you're just like, man, this rod's it's terrible.
You're making me like super self-conscious right now. I'm trying to think of what I'm doing when I'm stripping, if I'm doing that.
No,
like,
when you
what
strip,
do I do?
When you're getting ready, yeah. You know, you strip.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No, I'm like trying to think right now. I'm like, oh,
Eric,
shoot.
Just go fishing once and do it and you won't ever do it again.
That's,
I'll let you know.
Crazy. But you know, I change my lines out probably at least every year just because I don't clean my shit. Dude. So, you know, if I clean my fly lines, it'd make a big difference, but they wear out. I feel I don't even know what
it's
all they're, you know.
It's an expendable product.
Yeah, it's expendable. You're going to spend your money on some fly lines.
How many days you spend on the water, how often you fish. But literally, I have some haggard lines. Before I went to the salt, I have lines that are just cracked and just discolored brown. You come to saltwater, dude, yeah, maybe half year, 6 months to a year. I have tons of lines now.
Yeah.
It's a place I've never done
like
that.
A fresh fly line.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, you could clean it too. But
that first fishing trip with it, it lays so nice on the deck. Like,
yeah, and you can
actually stretch it.
It's not
straightened out.
You can clean it, and Rio makes, you know, the little wipes and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's silicone sprays and stuff, but you get a fresh line on there, man. Nothing feels better.
Yeah. So,
nope, 100%.
I mean, you know, so just recap real quick. A rod, you can spend as much as you want or as little as you want. They're all going to do great in the right hands. It's not. You know, I don't know how many times someone's had a rod that's been a budget entry-level rod, and they're like, it's no good, and I'm like, well, it's pretty good to me, you know? So it's not going to be the rod that's the problem. Reels, you know, it depends again, you know? If you're just going to chase redfish, you can get away with a cheaper reel. But if you're going to go to the Bahamas, you can still get away with a cheaper reel, but you want to have something that has a decent drag on it, you know, that you're going to use the drag. And then, you know, we talked about lines. Almost every company out there, from Scientific Anglers to Cortland to Rio, you'll find your favorite. I'm a Scientific Anglers guy. I really like their lines. But that's going to be your main three things that you need. We'll talk a little bit about leaders. If you're just starting out, I say go to the store, buy a couple prepackaged leaders. 20-pound leader, 20-pound tapered leader is pretty much standard. I mean, for around here, I mean, you can go 16-pound tapered. You can go 12-pound tapered. Just know that, you know, the lighter the leader, the easier you will break a fish off.
Right. Yeah, I mean, go to store, buy a 3-pack of 20-pound taper leader, 16-pound.
Call it a day.
Exactly.
Yeah,
can't go wrong with it. And the pre-made leaders, then, you know, they don't have those extra knots in them, and you're not likely to get as much, you know, grass and hung up on stuff.
I
agree.
It took me years until I even put forth the effort into learning, like, let's say a blood knot, for example, and tying tippet together and making my own leaders, which I do now.
Right.
But I was just like, why would I do that when I could just buy a nice tapered leader in a pack and good to go?
Yeah, like remove the variable, buy a tapered leader. We all probably tie our own leaders at this point, but like starting out, you don't know what you don't know, and don't introduce something else that can mess you up.
And then, like, you know, I guess the last part of the terminal tackle is the fly. Easiest thing to do, go to your fly shop, say, hey, I want to go chase some redfish, or I'm going bone fishing, or I want to catch sheep's head or sea trout or whatever, you know, whatever you're trying to catch, and, you know, buy you half a dozen flies and go for it. Me personally, I don't think fly matters as much as fly placement, so there's that. But just get a handful of flies.
I bet locally you fish less than four types of flies.
Probably fish like two.
Yeah, and again.
And yeah, it's the same fly, it's just different color.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Right.
Again, this is very local. So, right. I mean, you go somewhere else and you're like, yeah, this is the wrong size, wrong color, wrong.
Well, it's the same thing in the Bahamas, though. You run down there and the guide's like, oh, that's a great box, but you're only going to use these.
Yeah.
Of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like the rest of that box, useless.
And here. This is going to be way too basic for you all, but, you know, I'm new enough to the sport that I still remember all these things that really messed me up. And I took one of those, like fly fishing 101 classes, learn to fly fish.
I took the one from one of us.
No, that's great.
It was great. And I highly recommend something like that because it's just a great way to just go try it out. But when I was learning how to tie flies on, a critical step was missed, wasn't instructed, and it's put it in your mouth. You've got to get it wet.
Got to get the leader
wet. Lubricated. And so I lost several flies and I couldn't figure out what was happening until I was tying on a fly once and Rob's like, you got to stick that leader in your mouth. And I was like, what?
Yeah, definitely.
No one ever told me this.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, basic, right? Like we're talking basic and what people now would look at me like, are you kidding? But you know, those are the things when you're first starting out, I didn't know.
If you have an outlet and if you have the time, so me personally, if I were to do it over again, I would totally start out by taking lessons because I could have saved time, first of all. I'm sure I've picked up a bunch of habits or bad habits, I'd call them, with casting and, you know, the list goes on. I mean, I've been able to undo those bad habits probably over time, but again, you're going to save time. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to do that, it's probably the best way to get in.
Yeah. And that's perfect because, you know, we got our rod, we got everything. We're leaving the fly shop, right? We go home, jump on YouTube, learn how to tie a couple knots, you know, and then, you know, watch a couple videos, try to learn a few things on your own as much as you can and get out there and start casting. But, you know, one of the things I think all of us, like Eric was just saying, is like, I don't know how many times every fly fisherman will say it, but we can't say it enough, you really are doing yourself a disservice if you don't take a lesson and you're getting started. Getting a lesson at least gives you things to work on that you don't know you're doing.
I'd even say a lesson before you buy your first setup.
Hey,
absolutely.
I'm
I
down
did.
With that too. Mm-hmm.
You know what you're doing before you go in there and try rods that you're going to buy at mm-hmm. least a little bit, because you could buy something that completely doesn't match your casting style. Not that you have one that early on, but at least you know what you're kind of
right.
doing.
Yep. And I agree. I mean, in lessons, I mean, there's, you know, Instagram, Facebook, you call your local fly shop, see if they give lessons. You know, many of them do. And that's a great place to start.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even think to go to YouTube or, and I wasn't even in the fly fishing community, so I didn't have anybody to watch on Instagram. But I went, like I said, I took that kind of fly fishing 101 class, and then I started practicing on my own. And then I went to my local fly shop and took, I don't know, maybe 4 lessons. And what I'd say is, you know, it's critical to start practicing out in the grass, but there's nothing like a lesson where there's water.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just night and day.
Well, you need that adhesion, the water adhesion mm-hmm. on the line, being able to pick that line back up. Absolutely. I mean, my girlfriend, for example, she's light years ahead of where I was in the amount of time that she's been fishing compared to myself, because she took a few lessons and was able to do that and able to listen. I'm not
also women listen.
And that's what I was just saying.
What?
I'm horrible. Yeah. What'd you say?
What are you talking about?
I don't know
man.
What he's talking about.
I'm glad Jen's here so we have that side of
So what I did is I, in addition to going and taking private lessons, in between, what I would do is I would go out to a field and I would literally take teacups because I had enough of them and I knew they weren't going to fly away. And so I would just turn those upside down and I put them from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock in a semicircle. And I'd start about 30 feet and I would just pick up and cast 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, all the way around. And then, you know, if I was feeling, you know, good about my cast, I maybe try, see if I can get 10 feet past that target. Or sometimes I would try my short shots, and that's what I really needed to probably work on more of, especially with our species here on the Texas coast. You know, we sometimes get 10 and 20 foot shots. And one thing during lessons and really trying to target these targets is to not cast at the target. That was my biggest mistake. I mean, through the whole pandemic and lockdown, that's what I did each day for a little bit. And I started to get pretty good at hitting those teacups. And then when I went on my permit trip 5 months into saltwater fly fishing, and I hit my first permit in the head, because that's all I had done was try and practice hitting the target.
So going back into how important lessons are mm-hmm. and really putting your time in is, so you can spend X amount of money. You can pay as much as you want for gear. You can have the best guide. You can go to the best lodge, have the most expensive trip, but really comes down to who you are as an angler, how much time you want to put into it, how much practice you put into it. And Jen, like, I mean, you really haven't been fishing for that long. I mean,
almost 2 years for saltwater. Well, yeah.
Okay. That's 2 years. But
well,
like,
fly fishing,
that's
right?
like
not
what
long.
you've been exposed to and what you've been able to accomplish in that time, at least from what I've seen, is the amount of time you put into practice and applying everything that you've, you know, learned both by yourself and from others. Mm-hmm. And what you've been able to do in that short amount of time is incredible. And from what I've seen, it's based on, you know, what you learned to begin with.
I mean, I think a huge part of that was, you know, the pandemic and being able truly like being able, like not working and thinking, okay, I want to fly fish and now I've got time. And so how do I make this happen? And all I heard from people as I talked to them was practice, practice, practice. And so I thought, well, those are the things that I can control. And so I want to practice. Of course, I knew that redfish were going to be the main species that I'd target locally, but I became immediately obsessed with permit. And so that was my entire goal.
And you accomplished that goal, right?
I did.
Yeah. And there's how many people out there that go X amount of times per year or whatever.
I don't like
anyways.
I don't care about this.
No, I'm just
you know,
saying.
Let's like, okay. So Like, but lessons. On that
also, you're practicing in your yard. You're not practicing right. when you're paying a guide. That's like right. the time to practice is at home.
Absolutely.
On your own, not when you're paying a guide being out there. Like, that's when you want to fish.
Right. Yeah, right. And that's what we're saying. You know, you can go to your local park. You don't need water. You don't need to be on the water or live on the water. Right. Go to your local park. Go to a field, mm-hmm. the school. Mm-hmm. If there is a pond or you got a pool in the backyard, you can practice there. But I mean, it, you know, the more time you spend practicing and with a rod in your hand, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah. And so like with lessons with an S, you know, it's like, you don't go just take one lesson, you know, take a lesson, go practice, and then go back and take, I still take lessons. And you know, Eric doesn't know this, but his roll cast is like fucking 60 feet. I don't even know. So like, I want a lesson, you know, I'm like, I need to get better at that.
It's route guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's foreign.
It's right. Amazing.
You guys don't need that shit out here.
Right. But I mean, you know, for everyone out there, you know, go get a lesson, go get a couple lessons, mm-hmm. you know, space them out, you know, go work on, ask your instructor, like, hey, I'm doing this, you know, what, give me a couple things that I can work on.
And get maybe different. Well, so I've had, I think, maybe 4 different people, some actual lessons and some like kind of checking my cast or like at a casting clinic. And I like having different perspectives and different eyes on my cast. And because someone might see something or explain it in a way that somehow resonates and makes more sense to me, not because the other person didn't explain it, just because I'm new to it and I'm trying to get muscle memory and it doesn't always all jive. And so that's been really helpful for me to have other people.
Oh yeah. Well, you're saying having another set of eyes on what you're doing is like, that's priceless. That's what you need. It, you know, you're going to be doing things that you don't realize right. until somebody tells you. Kind of like what Rob was just saying with stripping outline. I'm like, shit, am I doing that? Like, I have no idea now, dude. Like,
fish with friends that aren't afraid to tell you, hey, man, this might be what you're doing.
Right.
You know, maybe they're not knowledgeable enough to say, hey, I think you're doing this wrong, but somebody around you is. And fish with those guys.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like, okay, so you took a lesson, you know, you're practicing in your yard. And I think one of the main mistakes a lot of people make when they practice in their yard, once you get comfortable and you can actually unfold the leader, like, don't just have the line out 40 feet and pick up, you know, strip in and pick up and throw it back out there. That's not really practicing. It is, but it's not. What I like to kind of tell people, because when the first time they step on the front of a skiff, it's all out the fucking window. I mean, everything they've practiced is gone. But one thing I like to see, even I do it myself, just I think a lot of people starting in the sport with their cast, they take too long to get the fly out. And you know why they take too long? Because they don't practice it. So what I say, instead of just getting the line out there 30 feet, 40 feet, hitting your target over and over and over, anyone can carry 40 feet exactly and put it down right on the target. But to actually start with the fly in your hand, throw it in the air, get the line moving, and then judge how much line is in the mm-hmm. air with your cast and if you need to shoot or not and hit your target. I think if you practice, it sucks. You got to strip in all the line, put the fly in your hand, get ready, and then go again. But it makes such a big difference, you know, along the Texas coast casting at these redfish, because that redfish might give you 2 seconds and you took 2 seconds to cast to get your fly in the air and it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to have some muddy ass water. That fish is going to be 5 feet in front of you, or it's going to throw a tail out of nowhere, 3 feet or 30 feet. And you gotta spit it out quick.
Yeah. And, you know, and another thing too, like I practice, you know, and my cast is not perfect and I still learn and I'm still working on my, I can double haul, but my forward haul, I haul a
you
little.
You can double haul. Yes, you can.
I haul a little too soon on my forward haul and I'm trying to slow myself down and haul a little bit better to make it punch through the wind a little bit better. But that's another story, because that's one thing you definitely want to learn.
Yeah, what's a double haul?
I don't know what. But yeah. I mean, you know, as far as like, you know, when you're practicing, you know, I want to see the new guy in the sport be successful. And you know, when you're practicing, practice your back cast or learn how to back cast. It's going to be one of those things that isn't going to come as easy as your forward cast, but practice a back cast.
Practice. I think my back cast is better than my forward cast.
Yeah. Well, see, which I don't,
I don't know how it ended up that way, but you know, it just.
Yeah. I love my back cast too, but you know, work on direction changes. You know, let's say there's a fish at 9 o'clock and you make a cast at 9 o'clock, and then all of a sudden the guy's like, oh shit, here's one at one, you know, learn how to pick up and lay that fly down at 1 o'clock with minimal false casts.
And I would say even before you, like with people who are just learning just the movement of casting, one of the things that really helped me was casting with my eyes closed.
Oh yeah. So what I was going to say is, so obviously more time you put in and practice, you're going to develop muscle memory. So having a muscle memory and feeling that rod in your hand, feeling the line load your rod, just everything, you know, and closing your eyes and being more in tune with that. Oh my God. Like once you get that dialed in, at least for me, like muscle memory is everything. You just, and that's with anything else you're learning too. You just reach a certain point where you're not thinking about it. And you just do it. And that's the best feeling ever.
That goes back to the cheap versus expensive rods for me too, though. You know, fishing a cheaper rod, I really wasn't feeling it load up, and I bought a more expensive rod, and I'm like, oh, that's what this is supposed to feel like.
Dude, that's another most amazing feeling ever is you get, like, you know, for me too, fishing cheap rods, and then you get something that's like built for what you're doing, and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you, this is going to be unpopular, but what really helped me feel my rod load was I overlined my rod, and that made all the difference in the world. And I was like, oh, now I can feel it. That's what you people are talking about when you really talk about a rod loading. And so, you know, just do what you need to do to feel it.
That could also be the belly of the fly line, you know, where the taper was. Like there's so many other things that can affect the rod loading. And that goes back to me not being set up correctly at first as well. You know, I bought that more expensive setup. They set it up right. You know, all of a sudden I felt it. Yeah. Now I pick up any rod and I can feel where it's loading. I know what it feels like now, but it was an aha moment for sure.
Yeah, let's back up a little bit too. We might have skipped over it, but like in the rod you're buying, 9 times out of 10 in saltwater fishing, you're going to buy a fast rod.
Yeah, there you go.
And so
get into actions.
The action is going to be fast. And what I find myself doing, I fish a fast, extra fast, fast rod. It depends on companies, but you might hear tip flex or mid flex or something like that. But what I find when my cast goes to shit with a fast rod, I just need to step it down to like, you know, a little bit slower rod and make me slow down my cast so I can see what's going on. And it kind of magnifies things to where it smooths you out a little bit if you go with a little bit medium action rod or slower rod or mid flex rod, whatever you guys want to call it. But
I can't cast a fast rod effectively.
I find myself if my cast is going south and I need to kind of practice a little bit, I'll grab a little bit slower rod to slow me down, and it cleans up my cast.
The margin of error is a lot smaller on a faster, extra fast rod. I mean, you're
right.
You don't have that rod bending and flexing.
Right.
And,
so for the new person, try them out, but I would not recommend a fast action rod. I had one and I sold it because I just fought with that rod and it didn't feel right. And then over the time I learned, oh, I really want like a slow to medium action at this point in my casting. But you know, you guys have been casting a lot longer than I have. And so I think when you get to that point, then maybe you want that fast action. I'm not there yet. So a slower rod for me is absolutely what I need. And I thought I couldn't really cast very well. I probably still can't, but with a fast action rod, it makes me feel like I can't cast at all.
Yeah. You know, and you do that. And that's the beauty of going to your fly shop. You know, you get to try out different things, but another, you know, you're going to go set up at a park. You're going to put some cones out at different, you know, distances or whatever. I mean, bring your ice chest, you know, and I know it sounds stupid and everyone's like, yeah, stand on an ice chest and, you know, catch, you know, like, yeah, stand on an ice chest,
dude,
you know.
Get ready to not move.
Yeah, get up on it.
Yeah, no one, you know, when you're on these skiffs, depends on which one you're on, but they all move, you know, and they're all dynamic. So the least amount of rocking you do, Like, I would try to cast with your legs together and just using your arm or your upper, you know, the upper part of your body, no leg.
Oh, I was told never move. Like, I keep my feet at 12 o'clock. I mean, now I know I can in the right way at the right time. But for, you know, all of my casting practice, my feet stayed at 12 o'clock. I did not move.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's an important thing that I think a lot of people overlook is keeping your feet at 12. I know we get lazy and we kind of move our feet around. If you're a little more experienced, you can do that. But sometimes, you know, I do this during tarpon season. I keep my feet 100% at 12 o'clock. Because I'll be dozing off, I'll look around, and next thing you know, my guide's like, hey, here comes a fish. They're, you know, he calls out, you know, the time, and I'm like looking over there, and I'm like, oh, shit. I'm really looking at, like, 10 because my feet are at 11. Mm-hmm. So, like, if I know my feet are always going to be at 12, then I know which direction I need to go and look, you know, and that kind of cleans all that up. But, like, stand on a cooler, stand on a... I don't care. You don't have to stand on a cooler if your balance sucks. Yeah,
you can
sucks,
make like a box
just
or
stand
something
on a ground. Piece of plywood, you know. Yeah. Just stand on something, you know, on the grass that, you know, kind of has a little bit.
I think that's great advice. I also think that depending on where you're going to be fishing, like let's say you're not going to be on a skiff and you're going to be primarily wading, then you need to cast on your knees because trying to, when you've got water at your waist and trying to get that line up and out of the water, trust me, the first day you're out there chasing a permit or whatever you're doing, you're like, shoot, I should have been practicing on my knees more because it's a whole different motor plan trying to get your line up.
Yeah. And just to like reiterate on that, yeah, practice how you're going to fish. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be wading all the time, you know, practice those kind of casts. You know, if you know you're gonna be that crazy person who just starts fly fishing and goes down to Mexico to chase permit and you're gonna be waiting.
Who are you talking to?
You might as well start out looking crazy by being on your knees at a park.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But mm-hmm. You know, practice that, you know, and it's the true thing. Or, you know, if you have a swimming pool, I don't care, get in a swimming pool, whatever you gotta do. I think the most important takeaway is get a lesson in practice. When you think you practice some more. Everyone needs practice. You know, no, I don't care if you've been fishing for just a couple months or you've been fishing for 10 years. Everyone needs a little tune-up, you know. I'm fortunate enough I fish quite a bit that, you know, I cast quite often. But, I mean, if I didn't fish for a month and a half and I was going to go on a fishing trip, I'd probably need to break out, you know, knock some dust off that fly line.
I did it last week in my front yard. I have water across the street and in my backyard, but sometimes it's cool to get on the grass, set out some random stuff. It was windy as hell. And my girlfriend and I put out some boxes. We had the dog out there and we're just casting for the hell of it. Just having fun and practicing. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we pretty much covered, you know, what you need, what you don't need. You don't need an 80-foot cast.
Well,
it helps.
I've got a little more with practice that I think is important because, you know, when I was what? I think maybe I'd been saltwater fly fishing for 6 months and I was going to go tarpon fishing in the Keys solo. And I had caught, so ridiculous, I had caught one redfish ever on fly. And so the reality is, had I practiced really strip setting or clearing my line, not so much. I had done a lot of practice casting. And so when I went for my lesson before tarpon fishing, I told my instructor what I was planning on. And so he worked on that with me because he, you know, grabbed the line at the end. And then I got to practice what it was like clearing a line quickly because I had never experienced that. And then I got to see what it was like, you know, fighting a tarpon, what I needed to do. So I got to at least try it on land without the pressure. So I think, you know, depending on which fish, which you're going to go target, target your lesson that way too, so that you're feeling like, okay, at least I know what this means when it happens.
No, I think that's great. You know, like for all of this, what do you need? You need a line, you need a rod, you need a reel, you need a leader, you need a fly. You know, those are kind of like the nuts and bolts of it. What you don't need is a trout set. What you do need is a strip set.
What is you know? A trout set?
I mean,
what
I think,
a strip set?
Well, that mean,
was, I mean, we could talk about that for a long time, and that was a huge habit for me to break. Right. Being,
well, I mean, you know, that's something
that one of them freshwater trout boys.
You know, for the, yeah. You know, I think one of those things is like, I think for our newer listeners that don't know what it is, I think they might learn better if they go look it up and find out for themselves, you know, than us just telling them and they just not even thinking about it.
Yeah.
But it's something that happens. Everyone does it some of the time. Sooner or later, something happens. I don't care who you are. They're going to trout set. And that's why I prefer the two-hand strip fishing for tarpon, because it can't happen if you do that. But I think we kind of covered everything on the you know, what you need to get started out, you know, the basics of everything. I mean, obviously, you know, we could probably talk about this for, we're 47 minutes in.
Go to your local,
go to your local fly shop.
Pick somebody's brain.
Pick their brain, pick your buddy's brain. I mean, there's tons of people on Instagram. I mean, I'd be careful who you ask, because everyone's going to have a different opinion on what works and what doesn't work. Most of the time, when you deal with social media, everyone recommends what they have.
Yeah. And I'd like to just take back what I said at the beginning, as far as like, hey, it's 2021. It's like, yeah, you have so many outlets and stuff, but honestly, when we're saying go to your fly shop and talk to the locals and whatnot and pick somebody's brain, that is probably the most valuable information you're going to get, firsthand information. So that's your best bet. Go do it.
The best thing you can do is find a way to get on the water. It doesn't mean you have to hire a guide. It just means you need to be in the water, on the water, wading in a kayak, on a paddleboard, standing on a bank, and starting to just read the water and understand. And so just figure out what's going to work for your lifestyle and your budget.
Yeah. While we wrap up all the what you need and what you don't need, the basics of a fly fishing setup. One thing we will talk about later, but I'm sure everyone listening could get on the Googles and figure it out, but you're going to need some polarized sunglasses. Whether your brand is XYZ or whatever, a good quality pair of polarized sunglasses will go a long way. So remember, do some practice. Get your setup at your local fly shop and give it hell when you go out there, you know? I mean, never, don't give up. It's a hard sport, but stick with it and it'll come. One day you'll be practicing and you'll be like, oh, this is what I was supposed to feel.
You're either going to love it and be like, hell yeah, I am so addicted to this, or you're going to be like, wow, like, okay, it's not for me. But I mean, honestly, 90% of the people that I know that I've introduced personally into this sport, they're still doing it.
And there's going to be
all I do.
And there's going to be a lot of days, if you're at all like me, where you're like, I absolutely love it. I'm totally addicted and I completely suck at it. and I'm terrible. Hey, and I'm gonna suck. And I'm like, I should just quit. This is just horrible for everyone.
We'll get into it sometime as far as like how we got into it, but
yeah, you're going to suck. Everyone sucks when you start. No one was born a fly fishing god. You know, it's a learned skill. It just matters how much practice you put into it is what's going to determine your success in it.
Hell yeah. There is no such thing as perfection, and that's why I do it. There's no such thing as a fly god, and if you think that, then you're in it for the wrong reasons, and you could always do something better.
Coming up, we have Guide Talk with Richard Gardner from Galveston on the Fly. What's going on, Richard?
How you guys doing? Appreciate you having me.
We're doing great. We're doing great. For those that don't know, you could find Richard at www.galvestononthefly.com or on Instagram at galvestononthefly.com. So, Richard, tell me what's been going on in Galveston.
It's been good, man. We had a great fall. despite the early freeze, I guess, we've had a phenomenal fall. So water's cleaned up finally, and we've been catching a lot of fish, man, as everybody else has as well. So not too hard to find them right now. It's getting a little tougher, but still not hard.
I hear that. So do you mainly fish Galveston West Bay, or do you venture off into Chocolate or more in Freeport or East Bay? Where do you like to hang out?
Yeah, typically, man, I'll launch from Sabine all the way to East Matagorda, but I would say 80% of my time, I'm in West Galveston Bay. Probably 75% of my time, I'm in West Galveston Bay. And if it gets a little tough there, the water gets high, I got to hit some different spots down south, kind of near Freeport and the likes. But ultimately, I got about a 150-mile stretch that I like to launch at, depending on where I can find the fish.
Right on.
But all in all, it's been a damn good fall. And
yeah. So do you think the freeze had much of a thing for up on the upper coast for our redfish, or do you feel like it's
If we did, man, I think we've rebounded just fine. There was a lot of fish. We've been on fish since probably late spring through now, but where I saw most of the stuff and most of the kills was down a little further south near the San Bernard River. And fishing around there, and Sabine for that matter. I saw a lot of fish dead in Sabine and the Sabine marshes in early March. But the majority of the fish I saw that were floaters were kind of San Bernard River-ish and Sabine. Not to say we didn't have a big fish kill in Galveston. It was a little tough in March, but March is a tough month anyway.
Right.
But we managed to find them in March as well. Just had to look a little harder and travel a little further sometimes.
Yeah, so in your fly fishing guide, of course, do you do any spin fishing trips as well? Or?
Yeah, typically, so 99.9% of the time I'm fly fishing. Even if guys are new at it, I leave the spinning rods at home to let them get the feel for it and try to muscle through the day with a fly rod. And they do well. They do well for the most part. But I do have the guys that have never thrown a fly rod that want to bring their friends that have never thrown a fly rod, and I'll throw the spinning rod in there. Maybe a couple of soft plastics or a gold spoon or something like that. Let those guys side cast a fish that way. But 99.9% of the time, I'm typically fly fishing.
What's a full day look like with you? What time am I crawling out of bed to meet you?
It depends on what time of year it is, really. It ranges from 6:30 on the water to 7:30 or 8 on the water, just depending on how cold it is, when the sun's coming up. If I'm looking for schools, I'll go out a little earlier. If I'm needing sun, I'll go out a little later. It depends on who I'm fishing with too. Sometimes a lot of my locals know the deal and they want to go out a little later whenever the sun rises so they can have a little bit better opportunity. We'll stay out a little later, obviously, if we launch at 8 or 8:30, but typically between 6:30, 7 o'clock, and 8:30 is a good time frame. I know that's a large time frame, but it just varies on what we're trying to do and what we're searching for that day. But half days, typically four and a half, 5 hours most of the time, sometimes five and a half. Full days, typically eight. I typically gotta reel them up at 8 hours, eight and a half hours, because I got a family to deal with and I gotta take care of them, feed them, and bathe them, and do all the dad stuff.
Hey man, I'm not gonna lie to you. I don't know how you do it, man. My full day is 4 hours.
Yeah, right on. It gets tired.
It's a long day.
Yeah, it's a long day. And a lot of guys have, 8 hours on the water, and guys are ready to reel them up anyway. Feet get tired, legs get tired, the focus goes away. You know, the afternoon bite sometimes and sometime goes away about noonish, 11ish, you know, yeah, it is. But we stay out there as long as we can and try our best.
Yeah, so what
guys on fish.
Right. I mean, that's the goal, right?
Right.
So, first-time client coming to fish with you, what's the conversation on the phone? What are you trying to, obviously you want to set them up for success, but you know, what's your lingo towards them? What are you coaching them on?
Well, what I typically do is I ask them what their experience is, and you know, I get a lot of freshwater guys coming from all over the United States fishing with me, and they've never sight casted redfish. So obviously I just tell them the gear. 8 weight, I'll obviously have all the gear, but if they want to bring their own, which a lot of them do, I don't mind that at all. We just leader them up, put a fly on, and we're good to go. 7, 8 weights, 9 if it's windy. Some of those guys like to throw heavier lines, and 9 weights perfectly fine. All the gear, sun clothing, hats, polarized glasses, as you know, are a must. I got plenty of sunscreen and bug spray for everybody, but typically I just try to find what their experience is and what their goal is, obviously, and how we can get to an end goal of them boating a few fish. A lot of the trout guys can cast a mile, and some of them can't. So, and the same with the redfish guys. You know, I get a lot of my locals, the majority of them are great casters, and basically look and try to gather their experience and try to work with it that way. They can't cast very far. I try to set them up downwind a little bit better. Sun's obviously important, putting the sun at your back. But if they're not great casters, I try to work with the wind as best I can to set them up downwind, give them a little longer shot. They're not loading the rod properly. And it seems to play out pretty nicely for unschooling fish. Sometimes in Galveston, you can get 5 feet from these schools and have just throw it in there, and they'll destroy it, as you know. So
right.
It just depends on how we're fishing. If we're looking for schools, cruising fish, tailors, single tailors, depends on what we got going on that day. And, you know, these guys do very well, actually. Some of my newer casters and newer fly anglers.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously, I think, obviously or not obviously, but, you know, our main target here in the Galveston Bay Complex is redfish. But just like a quick question for you is, like, besides redfish, what's Richard going to go chase if he has the carte blanche? I mean, you can go anywhere. What are you chasing? What's your poison?
You know, you see it on Instagram, me and a couple buddies fishing for redfish all the time. It gets a little cumbersome and old, and you know, I like to try new things. Obviously, Galveston's a little tougher than most places, but in the wintertime, I like to go look for big trout in that clear water, sunning themselves on those flats. I like to do that more than I do chasing picky redfish or sheep's head. But tarpon, we cruise the beachfront for tarpon. This past summer, didn't have any luck. Hit a few tarpon holes down south, didn't have any luck. I'd like to get offshore a little bit more than I do and go chase just random stuff, cobia off the rigs or triple tail off the rigs or weed lines and whatever we can possibly find out in the Gulf, you know. But I don't get out there and do it as much as I'd like, but I think I'm going to start changing my tune and trying that a little bit more this summer.
Yeah, so if someone wanted to book a trip with you, what's the best way to get in touch?
They can call me by phone. The phone number is 832-723-7413. Also, a great way of getting a hold of me, since that I'm not always by my phone, is got a little contact us tab on my website. You can go in and click that and fill out all your information. Just make sure your email is correct. I get a lot of contacts where their email is incorrect. So an email on the contact form is a great way of getting a hold of me. And that's pretty much it. I get a lot of DMs too on the Instagram, but sometimes those are wishy-washy and they don't pan out. So
yeah, you know, I find that too, you know, like either through email or through a phone conversation, you know, the Instagrams thing doesn't really work out too much.
Yeah, actually. Right. So yeah, I mean, from my personal experiences as well, and this is me being a sport or a client, call. If they give you a number, or if there was a number available, 90% of the time, my success with getting a hold of a guide is calling them. Or email.
Right.
But Instagram, right. I've hit up people on Instagram all the time. Nothing. And then I'll resort to, hey, here's their website, or they listed a phone number. Call them. Boom. Right away. So.
I agree. A lot of the, I think they, all the guys have probably gotten the same thing I've gotten with the Instagram messages and everything else. Not to say that a lot of them don't pan out, because they do. But I would say some of them don't, and put a lot of effort and time into answering these DMs, and they don't ultimately pan out. So I think a lot of guys realize that and probably go that route, just answering the phone and doing email stuff.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you taking some time to come visit with us a little bit. This is a little segment we're going to continue to do with different guides from our area. And, dude, we'll be sure to have you on again.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much. Had a great time. And tight lines. I'll see you guys on the water.
We'll see you on the water, man.
Thanks, Richard.
Good to see you.
All right, guys.
Later.
Take
All right, care. Brother. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, guys. That was Richard Gardner from Galveston on the Fly. And once again, the number is 832-723-7413 to book a trip. Or you can look them up at www.galvestononthefly.com or Instagram at Galveston on the Fly. After talking to Richard, I think it's a pretty... It's pretty easy segue to kind of move into a little bit of skiff etiquette. How to be an awesome guest on a skiff. Who wants to start this little wasp nest?
Dude, okay, like, I mean, I actually thought about this because it was, I mean, I don't want to say I'm a skiff whore, but I, given my job, I've had so many opportunities to fish with so many different people. And the first time I was on a skiff.
And Eric, what's your job for people who don't know?
So yeah, I'm a pilot. So with that said, my schedule is pretty open. I have, you know, weekdays off, weeks off, basically. So I'm able to fish a lot and fish with a lot of people in a lot of places. But anyways, skiff life, that's totally different, man. Everyone has their rules. And some of them are written, some of them are unwritten, okay? My first time on a skiff was with some local guys. There's some of my best buddies now, Corey and Mason. This was, I think, fall of like 2018 or something like that. This is just my first time, and this is just one person. But I remember, big no-no, okay, shoes, all right? There was no towel. There may or may not be a towel on a skiff, by the way. And some people care about shoes, some people don't. But I stepped foot on this skiff with shoes after we had launched in some muddy terrain. Okay. Oh, no. I'll just say that. So anyways, that was number one. Okay. So me nowadays, I don't even carry shoes with me if I go on a skiff unless it's cold. If it's wintertime in Louisiana, I'll have shoes on a skiff. Other than that, no, I'm barefoot. And there's lots of reasons why, you know, not to wear shoes. But that was my, that's number one.
I agree with you on the whole shoe thing. Most of the time what I do is I mean, of course, if it's warm out, I'm wearing flip-flops. And then most of the time I take them off before I walk onto the skiff. During the winter, I wear Uggs because they're quiet and they have flat soles and they keep my feet warm. And I keep those on in the winter.
I think I'm just barefoot all the time.
They look comfortable.
I know they're ugly, but they work.
Yeah, man. But yeah, shoe wise, I mean, we'll get into that. Like, just don't do it. I mean, unless it's cold. But, you know, there's lots of reasons why you don't, you know, just trot onto somebody's boat without taking into consideration, hey, should I be wearing shoes? Hey, are these dirty? Or like
make sure they're clean, you know?
Right. And that's just me not knowing, like being super just naive and just being like, hey, like, let's get on this boat and go fishing, dude. Like, no, it was embarrassing.
Skiff etiquette's a big one, you know, and we're talking about whether you're paying to go on a boat or your buddy invites you. I mean, you know, if you don't get invited back, you might have broke some of these rules here. And, you know, I'll just go around a couple of, you know, key points of, you know, how to be awesome when you step on someone's boat or skiff, whatever you want to call it. You know, whether you're leaving the dock or coming back to the dock after a day of fishing, you know, 9 times out of 10, the guy driving the boat doesn't need your help to dock the boat. So don't try to get up and stop the boat and help, you know, don't help unless he asks you, hey man, do you mind, you know, grabbing the, you know, or something like that. Or if he's dropping the boat in, you know, stay out of the way, you know, don't do anything.
Don't do
turns
anything.
Turns out he probably does that. Right.
And then
asked.
Get it when you get on and off of the boat, be mindful of that. Like, don't just jump on and think that boat's going to stay right where it is. Like, you know, take your time and keep one foot on land and like keep the boat stable and get on slowly so that it doesn't just push away from the dock.
Right. Right. So, you know, if you're going on a guided trip, you know, 9 times out of 10, the guide's going to have it tied off. You're going to get on the skiff and it's going to, you know, it's going to rock. It's going to, you know, bounce back and forth from the dock and the water. You know, God forbid it, you step on it and it sinks below the bulkhead and catches on the way up and, you know, traps the boat, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, just be mindful of, you know, entering and exiting the boat, cleaning your feet when you, most guides, if there's a towel there,
mm-hmm. use it.
You should probably know that
it's there for a reason.
Oh, yeah. You need to use it. It's there for a reason, for sure. So, you know, at the dock, don't help unless you're asked to help. I think the next one kind of goes without saying, but if you're going with your buddy or, you know, let's say two of you guys booked a guide or you're just going with a buddy fishing, you know, don't be a bow hog. Nobody likes a bow hog.
So that's like a big thing too. And me fishing with tons of people, guides, friends, etc. Everybody has their own, like, you know, like, okay, man, like, yeah, it's been X amount of time, I'm up. Or like, yep, just caught one. Like, all right, you're up, man. Or if it's a silly day, like I actually just fished last week with my buddy Snipes, and it was so crazy that we were switching off, you know, every two or three fish instead. Or, you know, you might have three strikes or three shots at a fish and you're out, type of thing. But yeah, being a bow hog, that's one of the worst things you can do. And, you know, I've never said anything to anybody, and I've never had anything said to me, luckily. But yeah, that's a big turn off. You're probably not going to get invited back, you know. And, you know, if you're unfamiliar with how it's supposed to work,
I think so. Yeah, I mean, there's no bigger turn off than, you know, if you know, 9 times out of 10, if you fish with me, you can be a bow hog, because I'd rather push than fish anyway. But, you know, if there's two of you guys on the boat, you know, and you get up there and you're blowing shot after shot after shot, you know, I think it's the guy on the back of the boat's job to say, hey, dude, you know, next.
And if,
you
know? If you're on a, like, you know, if you go to a fishing lodge and you're fishing every day with a new person, which I had that experience, then talk about it at the beginning of each trip. Like, how do you want to do this? Do you want to do it like 30 minutes, an hour? Do you want to do fish half the day and I fish half the day? Like, how is that going to work? And so, I mean, this was an all girls trip, so we communicate a little differently. We set rules at the beginning, but, you know, it was our hostess recommended at the time, you know, like literally set a timer and there's going to be 30 minutes and then 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
and so it just kind of people that are like that, you know, it's like, so okay, that, 30 minutes, you're up.
I know. So, you know, and like that might work, it might not work. Sometimes that's could be more stressful or depending on where you are in that flat and all of that. Of course, there's other variables, but so just kind of, you know, talk with your person.
Yeah. And if you're going to do the 30 minutes on, 30 minutes off, you know, I would, you know, say talk to your guide as well, you know, because, you know, you might be up there for 30 minutes and then you switch and then you're leaving in 5 minutes anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So
you have to talk to the guy.
You know, talk to the guy and say, hey, you know, say, hey, we plan on switching every 30 minutes, you know, and, you know, they might be chasing the tide and they'd be like, well.
Or you might be fishing with that one super fishy friend who no matter what the conditions are, and no matter the amount of fish are or lack thereof, they're up there for less than 5 minutes.
Eric, has this happened to you?
I'm the same way too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like it's just like.
But oh god. Yeah. You know, don't be a bow hog. Another thing too, it's like these little boats. I mean, they're not big, so be reasonable with the amount of gear you bring. Like one little backpack's fine. You know, bring your little water bottle. You know, if you're going with a buddy, you know, coordinate ahead of time on, you know, the ice chest situation. But, you know, if you're going to come fishing with me, you know, bring an 8-weight or 10-weight, both. Bring 2 rods. Don't bring 4. You know, bring a sling pack with what you need.
A fly box.
Yeah.
You don't even need flies with me. But, I mean, bring a decent, you know, it could be a boat box. I don't care, but I mean, you need, it's an essential. So if it's an essential, bring it. You know, everyone needs maybe some rain gear, depends on the weather, but like, you know, don't bring your 45 quart Yeti because, you know, I'm not, you know, if you talked ahead of time, you know, bring it if that's the deal. But,
dude, chances are if you're fishing on somebody else's boat or with a guide, they're going to have at least 50 to 60% of the necessities. So being as minimalistic as you can be,
all you really need is your a small bag with
yourself and communicate. Just be like, I mean, there's been lots of times where I'm like, hey man, like, I know you have like a built-in cooler, but should I bring mine? And they're like, hell yeah, dude, like bring your cooler. But I mean, that's going to take up space. But going back to the rain jacket or a rain shell, always bring a rain shell.
Yeah,
especially
I didn't bring
out
one
here.
That
well,
one
actually,
day.
No matter what. So, but, I mean,
okay, like, dude, I'm the worst. I'm okay, the worst like, at 100% though.
I always bring rain gear, especially investment. If you're going out of town. Always.
I own it. I own it. I always forget it.
Yeah. You know, this kind of goes without saying, but, you know, don't slam hatches or ice chest lids. I mean, you'd be surprised how many people don't know that, but that's another no-no to, like, not get invited back. Like, if someone does it on my boat, I'm like, fuck,
yeah, unless this person, it's like their first time or super naive. Like, you got to mention it and stuff. Right. But
now, don't be mean. Someone's going to slam a hatch and you're going to invite them back.
And then you're going to blow out a giant fish. Well, I'm not going to
be
mean,
but at the same time, I'm going to be like,
I will. I don't care. I'm sorry.
Like, dude, like, seriously?
Yeah, I just pushed a half hour to get back here, and now what?
Well, sneaking around too. So, like, going back to what you guys were talking about with practicing casting, like on a cooler or like in a box. Another thing too is like being aware of your casting and not moving that skiff or not moving at all. Like, I mean, you'll learn. You know, the more time you spend out on the marsh or in the saltwater environment, dude, like any sound you make, it can be like detrimental to your cast or whatever, you know, that fish, mm-hmm. you're going to spook something. You'll learn. But, yeah, even like moving your entire body in a cast or making a wrong step or like just, I don't know, just be super aware of your surroundings.
And all of these beautiful metal, you know, water bottles that we have, when they fall over on the skiff, they're done. So you're loud. Done. And I mean, we learned that this past year in during tarpon season. And you know, it's sometimes they fall over at the worst possible time.
And, you know, with all this being said, shit happens. So, you know, it's not the end of the world, but it's things to keep to a minimum, you know, which, you know, when you go, if you're on a guided trip or you're fishing with a friend and you happen to be the third guy and you're sitting on the center console ice chest, you know, and the guy's like 11 o'clock, 40 feet. That's not the time to get up and get a fucking drink of water.
No, dude. Don't even crack a beer.
Yeah. I mean, that's time to like kind of stand, you know, just kind of freeze and watch, you know, and then, you know, kind of pick your time to like get up, open the ice chest lid, get what you need. I mean, you're going to make noise no matter what, but, you know, make minimal amount of noise. And then sit back down and, you know, kind of be where you're going to be. Don't make sudden movements to throw the balance of the boat off or throw a pressure wave off the boat or whatever you want to talk about. But,
and you know, if you're getting a drink or a snack, you know, look at your guide and ask them if they need anything, because it's not that easy for the guide or your buddy to just hop down from the polling platform.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I just think they're up there all day or you're taking turns or whatever it is. But if you're new to the sport, just like realize that, you know, that's person two standing up there and they're probably thirsty.
Yeah. You know, and these little polling skiffs, they're pretty weight sensitive, you know? So if you're the guy on the back of the boat, whether it's the guide or your buddy pushing, if he tells you to sit somewhere, that's probably a good place to sit, you know, and you get bored. So you're like, no, you know what? I'm going to go lay down on the bench seat. And, you know, it just throws off the whole balance of the boat. It's harder to push. I mean, at least I know my skiff. I mean, the more weight that's forward, the better it is, you know? So, you know, just kind of be, you know, have your wits about you, what's going on out there, because you're just as much part of the equation as the guy fishing on the front.
All right. And then like another thing too, you're going to have people that don't care necessarily about, you know, how their skiff looks as far as keeping it clean or, you know, whatnot. You know, I'll fish with people and they're like, hell yeah, dude, we're going through this fucking grass right now and this mud. I don't care. Or like, dude, like you just dropped a half inch blade of grass on my skiff. Get that off now before I have to wash it an extra second when we get back. There's all sorts of different people.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You know, if you're like, you know, eating a hoagie sandwich and your bread and lettuce is going over, pick it up, throw it overboard.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's like, a certain point where you're just being like disgusting.
Yeah. Don't be disgusting on a boat.
Why are you boys being disgusting on boats?
Did we talk about the don't get wasted yet?
No.
Yeah. Don't get wasted.
Don't get wasted.
Don't get wasted on the boat. I mean, you know, for myself, I mean, I might have a beer when I'm on my way in. I might have a beer one beer while I'm out there, but that's pretty rare for me. I mean, I save my drinking for the professional game at the house. But
you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, don't get wasted out there.
If I'm serious, I don't drink and fish. I mean, of course, have we had an evening session? We go out for an hour after work and it's sunset.
I might bring a beer.
If I'm going on a guided trip or I'm fishing, all day. I mean, I'm not drinking.
Can we sit on the skiff? You're going to have a bad time.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, we go down to Mexico and we're fishing these lodges, and it's lunchtime and, the guide's like, what do you want to drink? I'm like, I don't know. What do you got? He's like, beer.
Beer.
And I'm like, what else you got? He's like, beer. And I'm just like, shit, I guess I'm having a beer for lunch. Like, I really don't want to drink,
But when is it going to kill you in the middle? Well, for me, I feel like in the middle of the day in Mexico, and I've had a beer on the skiff and I always think, shoot, I don't normally drink and fish, but it doesn't really.
I'm pretty nice.
I'm not at that. I'm not at that level yet. Give me a beer.
Right. But I mean, sometimes, that's all they got, So, but I mean, skiff etiquette, it's, treat it nice. Treat the, some of these guys, have all their hard-earned money into their boats and skiffs. So, they want to keep them nice. And, the better you treat it, the more likely you're going to get invited back. Another thing, too, about a little bit of skiff etiquette is these four-stroke motors, they pretty much run on air. But, unless you fish with someone all the time and you guys switch boats all the time, but if you're going fishing with a buddy, I mean, even these small boats with gas prices, might cost, they might put in $40.
Not even, man. I mean, but it's just the thought,
Yeah, it's the thought, offer to buy them lunch or something. That's something nice. Or when you guys are done.
Yeah, it's like this boat doesn't run on thanks, but, it does. But
well, and, when you're done, it depends on the type of, whether they're launching out of a sling or on a trailer, I mean, the boat needs to be washed. Some people want some help and some people don't, but it's always nice to offer.
Go the extra mile. If this is something you want to do, you don't own a skiff, but you want to fish. Just be a good person, be a good friend. If you enjoy it, pay it forward, keep it going. I don't know. It's like somebody's house, respect it. With everything you got.
And 9 times out of 10, if you're fishing, you waited too long to set the hook, the fish, swallows the fly, fish is bleeding all over the place. That's just the way it goes. Don't feel bad about any kind of things like that. But, you might want to take some water and kind of scrub it down a little bit.
Your fish is going to bleed and or shit on the boat at some point. Clean it up. Don't leave it there. So,
anyone got any other skiff etiquette? I mean, I know we're just barely touching the surface with that, but
literally, the list goes on.
Yeah, the list goes on. We could spend a ton of time on there, but don't get wasted. Don't be stingy. Be nice. Shoes.
Keep it clean.
Stay in the center of the boat. I mean, most of the time, the center line's the best line to be on the skiff. It's better than the side,
Bottom line, man, if you're unsure, just ask. Yep. Just really. I mean, and I'm a shy guy, and I blew that, on my first time. And looking back on it now, I'm still embarrassed about it because I left a mud trail. And thinking about it now, it's like I would never, ever fucking do that ever again. But I did it, so.
Yeah, and I think skiff etiquette, the more you're on one, the more you know. And if you don't know, go buy one and then you'll know what you like. But now I think it's a little bit of a time for a little question and answer. We got a couple questions from Instagram. And Blake.Branson asks, what is your process for picking your days? Wind, sun, tide, moon, etc. I'm gonna let Eric kick this one off, and then I'll chime in.
Okay, so I don't want to say I'm the worst person to ask because I'll literally fish in a puddle any day that I have off any bit of water. I mean, for an example, like last week, it wasn't prime weather. It was, we had one day right before I started a work trip and it was blowing about 25 miles per hour. It was overcast and I wanted to torture myself by, hey, can I go catch a sheep's head in this condition? The answer was no. I spent 4 hours out there anchored up torturing myself.
I thought you could catch a sheep's head in any condition, well, Eric.
But you were doing what you loved.
Yeah. But it was all about the passion. So, but no, man, it really depends on what I'm targeting, where I'm at. I mean, so many times fish are dependent on tide. Fish are dependent on moon cycle. Some people don't believe in that, but I definitely do from my experiences. Moon cycle, winds, sun. I'm fortunate enough to live 20 feet from the water. So literally I'll just like look outside my blinds. I have a flagpole in my front yard, which is cool too. I'll look if the flag's blowing. I'll look outside if it's clear or not and be like, hey, yeah, I'm going to get out at 6 a.m. mm-hmm. because conditions are prime. Or I'm like, I'm going to make coffee and bacon and wait till gentleman's hour, mm-hmm. 9, 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Same. We live on the water and we'll look out and we'll see are the palm trees blowing hard or not?
Yeah.
I mean, what's our morning going to look like?
There's so many different outlets, mm-hmm. like Windfinder I mean, I'm super lazy and I'll literally just use my iPhone weather. That's 95% of the time. Like I will just look at, okay, here's a temperature. There's a sun shining. So that's kind of cool. Like I'm going.
Right.
And like, you know, I'll end up torturing myself a lot of the times, but if you don't put your time in and figure out, you know, what that certain species likes in that particular watershed or wherever you're at based on conditions. I mean, sometimes I'll go out in prime conditions. It's dead calm, freaking awesome. And I'll get skunked. Or like, you know, the other day when I went for those sheep's head, the plus side of that. So I went going specifically for sheep's head in the worst conditions. On my way out after 4 hours, I found a shit ton of redfish and I was solo, but I stuck, you know, 4 or 5 redfish solo when the conditions were horrible and I wasn't going for them. So, you know, that was cool. So just get out on the water, check it out. You'll figure out what works.
Yeah. For me, it's a 4 a.m. like decision being made versus
I know. Yeah, I was there decision. Too, man. I was, you know, living in Midtown.
So it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's like trailer the skiff, God. Get it down there. But I mean, I blow off more trips now based mm-hmm. on weather than I ever have. But it's only because it's like it really is legit an hour and 25 hour 30 minutes for me to get there.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So it really needs to be worth it for you to, I mean, that's, you know, it's a luxury for sure for us to be able to go out for an hour and be like, well, that isn't great. Let's go home.
That's a brand new luxury for me. But even though, like, James, you know, I was in your situation too, but it's just all about, like, I mean, for me, like I said, I'll go fish a puddle if I know there's fish in there, you know?
Yeah. I'll usually bail
no matter what, but
I'm 10 minutes away from launching on Conroe. So I'll go find something to do over here.
Yeah, exactly. There's options.
I'll walk to my pond. So.
Yeah. Blake, I mean, the way I would look at it, like, what's my process for picking my days? If I had my choice, the wind doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, I want it to be a constant wind, whether it's from the southeast or the northwest. I just want it to be, a constant direction. I want it to be low, of course, you know, under 10 miles an hour. That would be the idea situation.
But that's also more for picking your location, right, Rob?
No.
Like, where you're going to go.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, it depends, you know, if it's southeast wind. You know, if it's under 10, you can pretty much go anywhere. But I mean, you know, it depends on a lot of variables, but you know, are you going to fish the lee shoreline? You're going to fish the windward shoreline. It just kind of depends. But 9 times out of 10, us as sight fishermen, we're going to pick the lee shoreline, which is the less wind shoreline, the calmer shoreline. So, you know, if the wind's blowing from the southeast, you know, I'm going to target those southeastern shorelines, the southern shorelines, because, you know, in theory, the waves aren't lapping against the shore, churning it up. So it's going to be a little bit smoother, a little bit calmer, a little bit clearer. It's going to let some of the dirt settle, some of the mud settle. That's kind of my thinking on it. So the wind direction, it just needs to be calm. The sun, obviously, we want full sun. 11 o'clock sun's the best, I think, somewhere in between that range. The tide, I'm going to choose a falling tide every day of the week. And the moon, somewhere the front side or the back side of a full moon, I think, you know, the bigger the moon, the bigger the tide, the more tide movement, the more activity with the fish. So to tie all that together, if I had to pick a day, I'm going to be fishing a northwest wind with the tide blowing out with full sun.
All right, man.
I mean, that's going to kind of take me to where I want to go. And, you know, it kind of like, you know, and just like fishing with Jen, you know, we're going out and she's like, well, why are we going here? You know, and it's like one of those things. And I don't really think about it, but I know it. But it's a simple one of those things. Like, let's say I'm going, it's blowing northwest. I have full sun. The tide's falling out. The moon's, I don't know, 2 days before full. Where am I going? I want to hit a lee shoreline, which would be a northern shoreline. But on the same time, you know, the sun rises in the east. So it's going to shine on the western shoreline first and it's going to heat that shoreline up first. So if I'm going in the morning, I might target a western shoreline more than a northern shoreline just because of the way the sun's hitting. And if you're driving out in the morning in a skiff and it's sunny, look, see where the shadows are. If you know, there might be a lee shoreline and it might be sunny, or it might be the lee shoreline with the shade. You know, you kind of got to, that's what I look at whenever I'm deciding, you know, but some, I didn't really realize
that. Until I make you think about it, because I'm always like, well, you say, oh, well, this is where we're going to go, or this looks fishy. And I'm like, well, what's fishy about it? Like, I want to understand, why are we going here?
Because sometimes you just go.
Yeah, and you know, you know, as far as picking days based on weather, you know, I mean, here's a little secret that I go by, that I live by. 0.08 from the Galveston Railroad Bridge is probably the money tide for greens. 0.06, you're probably going to get stuck.
Yeah, and greens, this is, you know, in Galveston Bay.
Yeah, Galveston Bay.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you can get somewhere around that tide, I feel like it's low enough. You could see the fish really clear. But it's low enough, you might get stuck back there. But, you know, that for me has been the magic tide. And it's always, and it's pretty low. But
and so everybody's just going to have to know their tides and their water.
Well, I think that's the thing, you know, for picking your days. You know, we can't change the moon. We can't change the sun or the wind, you know, but we could plan around them.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
I'd rather fish an outgoing tide.
Another weird thing that I actually learned from musky fishermen is the moon set. And I'm actually a firm believer now.
Yeah, it's
super crazy. Probably the past year and a half, I've been paying attention to when the moon sets, like during the day. If you're like, oh, dude, like look up there. There's the moon. That's kind of cool. Pay attention to when that moon sets and see how that affects predatory fish. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, and Blake, I'm a big solar lunar guy. Like I'm all about the major and minor feeding periods. Mm. I live and die by major and minors. So I will try to get everything to line up the best I can.
Absolutely. What I find just a little bit now that I've learned about majors in the past, I don't know, however long it's been. And I'll look and I'll think, okay, we're in a major right now. And I mean, I kid you not. It's like clockwork. That's when the fish are going crazy. And that's when I get the majority of my shots is during a major. It's amazing. And I think Fishing Points has it. I mean, there's a couple of different apps and you can just pull it right up and then, and see. And, you know, not to say we won't fish outside of the major because the major isn't that long, you know, but by all means, you know that that's probably going to be the best time.
I mean, I hope I answered the question, or we kind of answered it well enough. Chili Willy 424.
424.
From Instagram asks, favorite time of year fishing the Texas coast? I'll go first. That one's pretty easy. And if I have this right, Chili Willy, you just bought a East Cape Glide. good choice. I had one fantastic little skiff for this area. Favorite time of year right now, it gets good in January, but in February it starts to get a little too cold, but we still make it happen. But you know, typically, wintertime fishing in the upper Texas coast, clearer water, colder water, fish are everywhere. This is notoriously for Galveston Bay complex. West Bay is a wintertime fishery.
And I'd say early November has been amazing for us 2 years in a row, just a little bit I've been here. And I don't, November has been phenomenal.
I'll throw in 2 cents. Yeah. But first, James,
I'd say October. October through February. I like it when it gets a little colder too, though. Like I like those chilly days on the water. I don't know why.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, I've only been here 2 years, and honestly, it's been the most screwed up seasons, I guess. Like as far as I've been able to gather from all the locals. So I started in fall 2018, which is awesome, and really fall. As far as a lot of fisheries go, it seems to be a really good time. So out here, Texas coast, from what I've experienced, anywhere from August through January, it's fire. It's awesome. Especially this year. I think with that early freeze we had, it kind of offset the season and made it a late start. So really right now, I'd say the past few weeks or so, it's really been like a true, I know we're in winter now, but a fall pattern. And hopefully it goes into, you know, late January or so. Because I know once you get into February through March, you get that Galveston grind. You get the clear water and everything, but it's a ghost town. There's nothing around, which is very depressing. But yeah, fall time for sure. Early winter. It's awesome. Fish are hungry. They're looking for food. They're everywhere. And that's how it's been the past few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, our fishing, at least, you know, we haven't fished for the past, I don't know, week or two. The wind's been blowing for us and it just hasn't been worth it to go out. But I mean, November for everybody down here was just absolutely on fire. And I don't know, I mean, Eric, tell us some of the things that you saw in November. I mean, I know that we had record days on a skiff. I mean, Rob has been fishing down here for, I don't know, almost what, probably 9-10 years.
Well, every time you guys went out and I talked to you or asked, like, hey, dude, like, how was it? Like, I don't know. Like, what do you mean you don't know? I don't know. It was stupid good. I literally don't know how many I caught. And that's how it's been for me, too. I'm just like, I'm just out here having fun. I don't want to count. I don't care.
Yeah. One day.
I'm not counting. I'm just having a good time.
Well, yeah. One day I counted because I thought, you know, I haven't caught enough redfish to like care not to count. And so one day I thought, you know what? One day I caught more than 5 redfish, and like 5 was always my record. And I thought if I could catch more than 5, that'd be amazing. And then we caught 25. And so it was, you know, 15 for me and 10 for Rob. And it was just one of those incredible days where, you know, those don't come around every day.
Well, are the days that, you know, make you appreciate the rest of the year, where you're just like, this is so silly. And then it's Galveston grind.
I wish
I saw a fish today.
Yes. I mean, you know, since the freeze, it was a grind for us. And then fall got amazing. And so, fishing's been pretty, pretty incredible.
Epic.
Yeah. And, you know, for all you guys out there, find us on Instagram and drop us a question. We love answering everyone's questions. So,
there's no stupid questions, right?
Yeah. There's no stupid questions.
And they don't have to be Galveston specific.
Absolutely not.
All of us travel and fish and fish and travel and like,
yeah, which, you know, I'd love to get into another episode because we've all done some incredible travels and fun fishing experiences, which will be a whole nother episode, I'm sure.
If you like what you hear, please do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast and write a review. In episode 2, we will talk about navigating new water, learning fly fishing through social media, and Texas fly fishing tournaments.